Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Montgomery, Alabama, and Detroit, Michigan. He earned an MA in criminal justice and a PhD in higher education administration from Michigan State University. In 1965, he became a Detroit police officer, and from 94 to 98, he was Detroit chief of police. From 2013 to 2016, he was deputy Detroit mayor under Mayor Mike Duggan. His name? Isaiah Ike McKinnon. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're with Ike McKinnon, who from 94 to 98 was Detroit Chief of Police. Ike, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's really good to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Absolutely. Well, both of my parents were born in Alabama, a place called Union Springs, Alabama, that it's still there. In fact, about 20 years ago, I went back to visit this place, and it's still this little small country community. And then they moved to Montgomery, and of course, I was born in 1943 and lived there for a month, and my family then moved to Chicago. And then we went back there for a period of time and then moved to Detroit when I was 9 years old. And I grew up, number one, in the Brewster Projects. Then we moved to the area near the medical center. And then out by Northwest Detroit by the University of Detroit at that time.
Your mom had a third grade education. Your dad had a second grade education. What's the biggest thing they taught you, Ike?
They taught me honesty and trust in human beings. I say that because my father always said this. He said, son, there are good people and there are bad people in every race. And what you have to do is find those good people. And it's ironic that I became a police officer and saw a lot of the bad people, you know. But he talked about it. He said, son, it's important. And that's what I tried to do.
Speaking of your dad, one night in the mid-60s, you were working security at Olympia Stadium for a Harlem Globetrotters basketball exhibition. And there was a special man there that night that you approached.
Jack, it's really incredible because my dad had told me all these stories about he played baseball in the Negro League. And one of the stars of the Negro League was Satchel Paige, Leroy Satchel Paige, who was probably the greatest baseball pitcher ever. And so my dad would tell me these stories. He said, son, I played with Satchel Paige. I played with other great ball players. Of course, as a child, you don't necessarily believe that. But there's Satchel Paige. And so I'm in uniform as a police officer. And at intermission time, there's Satchel Paige. And I walked up to him. I said, Mr. Paige, I said, this is my name. And I said, did you play ball in Alabama with a man by the name of McKinnon? And Satchel Paige looked at me, and he kind of wiped his brow, and he said, son, I don't think so. And I was getting ready to go back home and tell my dad, you know, you've been lying to me all these years, you know. So as I started to walk away, Satchel says, son, just a minute. He said, is this Cody McKinnon? I said, yes. He said, was he about 5'9", had big forearms? I said, yes. He said, talked all the time. I said, yes, you know. He said, he was a catcher. He said, I'm telling you, son, he said, he was great. And if the color line had been broken in those days, your daddy would have been in the major leagues. And, of course, I was excited about that.
They say Satchel Paige would play a game here and pitch the whole game. They'd get on a bus, go to Flint that night, pitch that game on Saturday. Sunday, he'd pitch two or three games. He was the only pitcher.
Satchel Paige told me a number of stories when I talked to him, and that he told me that story. He told me, he said, son, I said, Mr. Paige, I said, you know, all these pitches that you had, you know. He said, no, listen. He said, I had perfect control. He said, I could throw the ball any place I wanted to. I said, well, what about this B pitch or this other pitch that they say that you had? No, he said, son, let me tell you. He said, I had perfect control, and I could throw it hard. So you can imagine him throwing a ball 97, 98 miles an hour and moving anywhere he wanted to.
All right, you decide to become a police officer in Detroit.
Yes.
1965, the first night as a police officer in Detroit. What happened?
The first night as a Detroit police officer was probably one of the most eventful nights I ever had in my life. I walked into the second precinct, and I went upstairs where all the officers were for roll call. And I was the only minority there. And I said hi to a number of the guys, and there was no return. And as the sergeant came up for roll call, everyone lines up, and I'm the last person in line. And they start calling out names for car assignments. And they said, well, this name, Scout 2-1, that was a 2 is the precinct, 1 is the territory. 2-1, 2-2, and then they got to 2-7. And they said this officer's name, and he said, here, sir. And they said, McKinnon. I said, here, sir. And this officer yelled an obscenity and a racial epithet that just struck me. And, of course, all the other officers laughed. But it was a rude awakening to the reality of what was happening on the Detroit Police Department at the time. This officer, I rode with him for 8 hours. He never spoke to me.
Going back about baseball, 70 years ago, the world changed because of a man named Jackie Robinson.
Yes.
Who broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. And a lot of his teammates and opponents, you know, everything under the sun. But he played second base, and a guy from Kentucky, Pee Wee Reese, was the shortstop.
Yes.
And he came and put his arm around him and said, you know, I believe in this man, etc. Going back to 1965, Ike McKinnon, who was your Pee Wee Reese?
My Pee Wee Reese was a guy by the name of Frank Mitchell, who was a police officer at the Second Precinct. He was a few years older, and he talked to me. I think he and Andy Parker, another police officer, were the first two to talk to me. And ironically, Frank Mitchell and I are still friends to this day. He lives here, and he has a place up north. But we are great friends. I know his family. He knows my family. So that was important for me to get to know that there were, as my father says, good people in every race because of the things that I had experienced on the department.
We're talking Isaiah Ike McKinnon. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the 67 riots 50 years ago. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Ike McKinnon, who's also a graduate of the FBI Academy. Maybe the Trumpster is going to make him an announcement here in the next couple days, the new FBI director.
Oh, no. You know, that's interesting you say that. No, I graduated from the FBI Academy, I think, in 1977. And what they do is they send every police department throughout the country, and some from foreign countries, they'll send an officer they assume is going to rise in the ranks to the FBI Academy, just be there for 3 months and learn the epitome of law enforcement. And I was one of those officers who did so.
All right, 1967, the riots, the second night, you've worked an 18-hour shift. And you're driving home in uniform.
Jack, you're giving me all those things to think about that happened to me. So I'm driving home from the second precinct, and I'm going to give my Mustang, my 1965 black over green Mustang convertible, a plug here. I'm driving home, and I get off the Lodge Freeway at Chicago, and I had my badge on, my uniform, and the 2 on the lapel that said Second Precinct in those days. So I turn on to Chicago, and as I cross the Lodge Freeway, I'm pulled over by 2 police officers who happen to be white. And I said, police officer. I stepped out of the car, police officer. They could see I was in uniform. And at that point, one of the officers takes his gun, points it to me, and tells me, with a racial epithet, that I'm going to die. And it was like slow motion, Jack, in which I could see his finger pulling the trigger. And at that point, I was a little thinner than I am now and quicker. I dove back into my car, and I hit the accelerator with my right hand, steered the car with my left hand, and sped away from there as they shot at me.
Jumping forward, October of 84, the Tigers win the World Series here in town. Last time they've won.
Yes.
Tell us about that day.
That was a day that I truly loved because we had this sense or this feeling that the Tigers were going to beat San Diego. And I was in charge at that time of the tactical services section, was in essence a SWAT team. And so we were assigned to do the outer perimeter of Tiger Stadium. Jack, I'm telling you, it was beyond one's belief. The people out there celebrating, they had a huge TV screen on Michigan Avenue. They had people selling things in the loud boxes with the noise and playing the game and so forth. And again, we assumed it was going to happen. Of course, the closer we got to the ninth inning, the more people came downtown. And at some point, when the Tigers won, people started celebrating. And there are those who truly celebrated, and there are those who, you know, in every celebration, there are those who act out. And this is exactly what happened. Unfortunately for our city, we had people who were breaking windows in buses, who were doing things that no true celebrant was doing. And I recall specifically, as I'm trying to stop some of the people from doing what they were doing, people started throwing bricks and bottles. I still have my uniform at home, in which they threw a brick and cut my the sleeve on my jacket that I was wearing, and thinking that if I didn't have the jacket, I would cut my arm. But we had countless incidents that occurred. But the good thing was the Tigers won the World Series, and I was there for it.
We're talking to our most amazing man, Ike McKinnon. With all of these negativity, he's known to his granddaughter as Grandpa Sonny. What an outlook he has. Who else can say they've written 3 books, met 5 presidents, been on the Oprah show, and had breakfast with Bishop Desmond Tutu? You've met all kind of great people. Was there one that you said, wow?
Yeah, there's no question it was Nelson Mandela. In fact, let me correct you, 6 presidents, because I met President Obama last year when he came here. But, you know, he was the epitome of a person who you would say, my God, you know, I want to be like him. And I had the opportunity to speak with him when he was here on his first visit. I remember specifically, I said, Mr. Mandela, and I said, can I talk with you? He said, you know, just imagine his voice. Yes, yes, you can. And I asked him, was he upset with the people in South Africa for the way that they treated him, imprisoning him for 27 years? He says, young man, tell me about yourself. And I said, no, Mr. Mandela. I said, you're this icon. People throughout the world know you. He said, young man, tell me about yourself. Why did you want to become a police officer? I told him. He said, that's important. Tell the world about that. And I said, yes, sir, I will. And then he said, okay, let me tell you. He said, I'm angry at the people in South Africa for the way they treated me in my heart. But in my head, I know that's not the right thing to do because people would die. And so what I try and do is see the good in people. And he said, that's exactly the way that you see things. And I said, my God, you know, think about this. Here's this man, this international icon, is telling me about exactly the way that I feel about people. And that's been it for all these years. So when my granddaughter calls me Grandpa Sonny, she says so because she says, you have this sunny smile. And I said, yes. So Grandpa Sonny, she says, so all of her friends call me Grandpa Sonny, all these little 8-year-olds.
Ike McKinnon, you and Patrice recently got back from Rome.
Yes.
Where you were within 10 feet of the Pope. Do you ever pinch yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm on the board of Catholic Charities USA, and so we were in Rome for a meeting, and went through Mass with the Pope, and I'm looking up, and there's the Holy Father. And I said, my God, I'm just a couple of feet away from him. And in fact, Jack, I'm standing next to these nuns who I think were from the Philippines. They're calling, Papa Francesco, Papa. And he looks up and he smiles, but I'm standing next to them. And so my story is that he was waving at Ike McKinnon, you know, and I have this great picture of the Pope waving at me. So I showed my granddaughter, she's Grandpa Sonny, the Pope saw your smile. So, you know, I love it.
Okay, let's talk about some other legends. Coleman Young
was a man who certainly changed the city of Detroit. He was vilified by a lot of people, but as the first person of color to be mayor of the city of Detroit, that was almost to be expected. And he was certainly truly disliked by most of the white police officers on the department because of the things that he did, from affirmative action to other things. But I think that history has proven that here's a man who tried to do the best that he could and did most of that to a certain extent. Of course, there were some things that were not. But he, as history goes, will show that he was doing a good job of bringing about equality, certainly in the police department and other areas in the city.
Eleanor Josaitis.
Eleanor Josaitis was a saint. I mean, I knew her for years and years. And think about this lady who moved her family from Dearborn to Detroit after 67, after everything we'd gone through. And Jack, you know, as people who have not been there to see Detroit after 67, it's beyond one's imagination. But for her, who had this deep, burning desire to make a difference within this community, she did so. And she literally put her family and herself at risk by doing so. But that deep commitment she had, along with Father Cunningham, to make a difference.
Six kids under 10. She moves back to the city with her husband, Don. The mom and dad, her own mom and dad, take her to court to take the kids away from her.
Yes. Right? Yes, I remember.
Dave Bing.
Dave Bing was one of the greatest basketball players I ever saw in my life. I used to go to all, if not, yeah, most all the Pistons game at Cobo Hall. And I always teased Bing, Dave, about the time that he dunked the ball on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I said, why did you do that? He said, well, I just felt like doing it, you know. But Dave is a good man who became mayor probably at the wrong time because, I mean, there was no money. The city was truly broke. And we had just come off Kwame. And when you follow something like that and you don't have the finances that we're working our way to right now, it makes a big difference. I think that if Dave had come along at a different time, it would have been different for him as mayor.
Mr. I, Mike Ilitch.
Mr. I is a savior. Think about a man who, again, moved to Detroit when, I mean, everybody literally were running. He took his headquarters and brought it to Detroit, and he built things and employed people that that no one else was doing at the time. And you think about what he did for the Red Wings and the Tigers and for the city of Detroit. I mean, it became international. So he's a hero, not only to me, but to a great number of people. I remember when he passed, my wife and I went down to in front of Tiger Stadium where they had this big placard there and we could sign it. And there are people standing there in tears. I mean, and so were we. But you think about this in terms of what he did for our city. And that's so important.
We're talking to Ike McKinnon. And from 2013 to 2016, he was Detroit Deputy Mayor under Mayor Mike Duggan. When we come back, we're going to ask him about Mike Duggan. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Ike McKinnon, who was Detroit Deputy Mayor under Mayor Mike Duggan from 2013 to 2016. Mike Duggan.
Great man. Great man. Mike is one of the smartest people I've ever met. It's like sitting down and you know that you're thinking about something, but he's thinking about two or three different things. And to come along and to say, I'm going to take this job as mayor of the city of Detroit at the time we were in, he had the foreseeability to say, I want to make this change. And he did. I mean, it was a pleasure to sit and talk with him, not only about the things that he wanted to do, but the things he had done, but also the changes he wanted to make in the city. There's no one that I know of who could have done what Mike Duggan has done.
Today, Ike McKinnon, you're a professor at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Education. So you're dealing with young people every day. What do our young people today truly want and need?
Our young people today, number one, they want an education. They want to be heard. They want to be a part of society because, unfortunately, a great number of people are dismissing what these young people want. They tell me all the time, we want to be heard. We want to be part of society. And you older people, that's it for them, anyone over 30, you don't understand what we want. And so in the classes that I have, and the young people I talk to them, I talk to them about school. I talk to them about society. I talk to them about what they can do, what we can do to help them make a difference. And it's ironic that yesterday I spoke at Grosse Pointe South High School. And a young lady who was a student of mine 20 years ago, she said, "Dr. McKinnon, you know, you gave me the opportunity to express myself. You gave me the opportunity to do research. You gave me the opportunity to be a person and made me think about education." She's now a teacher at Grosse Pointe South. So I'm fulfilling my thoughts and my dream and her thoughts and her dream about life.
Speaking about talking to people, Ike, back in early April, you spoke to 120 high school principals. What was the message that day?
Well, Jack, the reason I spoke to those principals from, they were from Detroit Public Schools, it's my belief that we have not enough young men of color in education. And so what I did, and I talked to Dr. Garibaldi about this, who's the president of the University of Detroit Mercy, can we go out and try and talk with young men and say, "What? Look at the impact you can have on society if you're a teacher, if you're an instructor, or you're a counselor." And so that was the gist of what I wanted to do. So those, when I spoke with Alicia Merriweather, she was very appreciative of it, and all the other people within DPS. And so we talked to them about how we could work together, and we're going to try and continue to work together with other schools too, because, Jack, we have less than 2% of the educators in this country are men of color. And we have more men of color in the criminal justice system than we do educating. So I think that we can have a profound impact upon our society if we get men. Because, you know, we have so many men who are not, they are not doing what they should be doing in terms of responsibility with their families, responsibility with the cities, responsibility with schools. And so I think this is a start for what I and what we want to do.
Speaking of men of color with great potential, and God's got great plans for them, talk to us about Chief James Craig.
Well, I remember when I first met Chief Craig, we had this great conversation at lunch. And you can see that he has vision and foreseeability. Think about the community aspects of what he's done. Thinks about his ability. We talk about it. He says, "Ike, you're the person like myself who went out into the community." He said, "When something happened, you responded there." And I flash back to this. That's exactly. Jack, remember, whenever there was something major happened in the city, I was out there. And so this is what the Chief Craig said to me. He said, "People say you did the same thing." And that's important. If the chief shows, as he's doing, that he cares, his department cares about the community, it makes a tremendous difference in the community-police relations. And that's what I think that he's really good at.
Speaking of going out to the community, on May 1st, he went out to the press, to the media, and talked about that in the past 8 months, 8 Detroit officers had been shot or killed. And he lamented that far too many leaders kept silent about that.
Jack, let's take it even further. Far too many leaders, and I'm speaking of everyone, we have too many people that's being shot. We have too many people that's being killed, and we're sitting back and accepting this. And so it's important for everybody to speak up, not just the leaders, but everybody. You know, if this happens on a regular basis, we condemn what's happening in Chicago because of the great number of people that's there. But everybody here in Detroit has to speak out. Because once it touches us, then it becomes a personal problem. But it's a personal problem because we are all part of this group of people that's trying to help our city. So, yes, I think ministers, I think priests, I think whomever, teachers, we have to speak out and say enough is enough. Because if we don't, then who does it? I mean, the gangsters speak out, the people who shoot each other, shoot police, and whomever it might be. Yes, we all have to speak out.
Black Lives Matters, All Lives Matters, White Lives Matters, Blue Lives Matter. Tell us about the job that our police officers do in America every day.
It's ironic, Jack, that I'm speaking out in Macomb County on respect for law enforcement officers. Jack, I was shot at 8 times as a law enforcement officer. I was stabbed twice. And people don't know that, but in terms of what our law enforcement officers go through, it's important to understand to serve and protect. And they don't know, their families don't know, when they leave their home that day or that evening or that night that they're going to return home. It is probably the most difficult job in the world that we select to go into as a law enforcement officer, what my duties are. But we have to understand the tenacity of that job and how difficult it is, and understand also that we need the support of the community. We need for the community people to say, great job, and respect the officers as we try and respect everyone else.
If there's a listener tonight that's thinking about getting into law enforcement as a career, what would you tell him or her?
Do it. Do it. It's just that simple. Because we need good people. We need people who think and feel that it's a calling that they have to not only help law enforcement, but to help their respective community. When I went into law enforcement, I knew that I could make a difference. And we need people who are smart, who are in shape, but who can help a community. And that, to me, is one of the most important things that we can do.
Our guest tonight has one of the most amazing resumes you'll ever see in your life. His name, Ike McKinnon. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Ike McKinnon, a.k.a. Grandpa Sonny, who became a Detroit peace officer in 1965, served for 19 years, and also was Detroit Chief of Police. Let's talk about the rebirth of Detroit.
Jack, you know, I recall when Mayor Duggan asked me to become deputy mayor. And I remember specifically that day because he said, Ike, there's a lot of stuff we have to do. Who would have thought that we'd have all these streetlights on? The response time for a EMS vehicle was in the 20 minutes or something. Detroit was the worst place in the nation to have a heart attack. We're down to, I think, about 5 or 6 minutes for response time. Grass, not grass growing, no, kids didn't have a place to play on playgrounds, and on, a great number of things that were happening. But that's changed. And so I talk to young people, black and white, from the city and outside the city. They're saying, I want to move to Detroit. And when Mr. Gilbert said, I want to make Detroit the tech town of the Midwest, I mean, God, it's just blossomed. So we take Gilbert, we take Illich, we take Mike Duggan, and there's this threesome that's doing tremendous things to improve and change not only the image of the city, but the reality of what's occurring here. I've really loved it because as deputy mayor, I got to speak with whether they're their consulates or people who wanted to come into Detroit. People from the Far East, they said, we see Detroit as a place of opportunity. And they are investing, they want to build, they're sending their kids here. This is tremendous to see.
When you're downtown, Ike, when you're in Midtown, Woodward, when you're New Center area, what amazes you the most?
Well, what's amazed me the most is all the buildings, the growth that's there. You know, my wife and I drive down Woodward Avenue. God, this is new. This is new. And there's this restaurant called the Grey Ghost. I'm telling you. I mean, not to demean any other restaurants, but my wife and I had dinner there one night, and I had this lamb shank. Jack, I'm telling you.
He's showing about 4 inches between the thumb and the middle finger.
God,
4 inches, Mark, right? That lamb shank.
This thing melted in my mouth. And so it's ironic that we were at the market the other day, and the owner
Are you a spokesperson for this Grey Goose?
No. But I know him, you know. His name is Vermiglio. But, I mean, it was great. It was great. And so I said, I'm coming back. Save me one of those lampshanks. And so I tell people
about this. Did you pay for that lampshank?
Of course I did. Okay. But I tell people all the time, look, they're great places to eat in the city, but they're all over.
Seriously, Ike. Hmm. In the 30s and the 40s, the black family was arguably the strongest family unit in America. What happened? And most importantly, how do we get it back?
Well, I think one of the most important things in terms of the decimation of the black family has been drugs. You know, we had families that moved up from the South as mine did, and there was a close knit there. But somewhere in the 60s, that drug culture took over, along with, of course, we had the racism that was there. But to me, in terms of decimation of the family, the drug culture was and is one of the worst things that could happen, because there was quick money to be made. And if a person doesn't have to work, as my father and probably other fathers did at the automobile factories or other places, and they can make, as I saw these young kids with $25,000 in cash on them, and they're 15, 16 years of age, it's a total, as they use the term, decimation or depletion of families.
In the Indian community, Chinese community, education is huge. How do we make education important in the black community?
We've got to continue to, again, growing up for me and for other people of my age, it was so important because it was something that was denied. And so now it's there. It's like what I'm saying about it, getting young people to come to U of D, Mercy, or any school, but in particular my school. We have to look at how do we convince people, and that is one of the most difficult and important jobs we have, is convincing young people of the importance of education, because they see other things that they can do. You know, there are so many possibilities for young men of color. And so what I try and do is continue to talk and tell them, look, you can do this, you can do this. Well, I'm going to be LeBron James. Well, there's only one LeBron James. There's only one Michael Jordan, and so forth. I said, so think about this. Why don't you want to become a guy who could possibly make hundreds of thousands of dollars? Well, yeah, but that's too hard. No, it's not too hard. If you do this, 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 and this, and it's going to take you some time, but that's the most difficult job, Jack.
We're talking to Ike McKinnon, who's a gentle giant. And a very courageous man in a very unassuming way. Where did you get the courage to do all these great things, Ike?
Well, there's a number of factors. Number one, as my father said, always look for the good. And that's what I do. But along the way, I realized the importance of education. And let me tell you, Jack, that the person who sent me on the road to education was Mayor Jerome Kavanaugh, who said, Ike, the world is changing. Get that. But I go back to my 7th and 8th grade teacher, Mr. Raymond Hughes, who's still alive today, who talked about that also. And Mr. Teasley, 7th and 8th grade teacher, the importance of education. I listened to that. And see, if we get young people to listen to the importance of education and what it can do for you in the future, that makes a difference. My two sons, I remember them saying to me, Dad, we knew that we were going to get a college education. We knew the importance of, because you and Mom talked about that. And see, to me, that makes a big difference. And I think that if more parents did that, it will certainly change not only their lives, but the lives of their families and in the future.
Another thing I've admired about you through the years is your faith is very strong. What role has faith played in your life?
Jack, you know, it's one of those things where you say to yourself, God, what do I believe in? Of course, it's there. But my father was a guy who either every night or every other night, he would have one of the kids read the Bible to him. Now, my father played this role. Well, you know, I can't read that good if my eyes are bad. But what he was doing was getting us to read and understand the Bible. Then he would say to us, well, what did you just read? You know, and you know, he was literally tricking us, but he was also getting us to understand it. And so it was a great learning experience, but also something that built it in me. A lot of my friends are seminarians or priests or bishops or the archbishop.
Or popes.
I wish, because certainly when he waved at me, you know. But it means a lot to surround yourself with people who are of like mind and have faith and want to make a difference in the lives of other people.
The most used phrase in the Bible is not love your God, it's not love your neighbor. 365 times in the Bible, like it says, be not afraid.
Be not afraid, yes.
And a lot of people are afraid today.
Yes, yes.
A lot of kids are afraid today.
Absolutely.
What do you say?
Well, again, we're talking about listening to people who can help you, but listening to people who can make a difference in your lives. And if people are afraid, well, I'm afraid to go and say something. I'm afraid to talk about this. I'm afraid to go to school. It's ironic. We say this, Jack, but I was at Grosse Pointe South, and they were telling me there are people that are afraid to young African-Americans afraid to try and get into Grosse Pointe Academy because it might be too tough. No, no. They should try and get in there because it's a great school. Great schools like Michigan, Michigan State, and UD Mercy, or whatever it might be school, because they are great schools. It's not because it's too hard. So don't be afraid of that challenge. That to me, has been the most important thing. As I went through school, undergrad, master's, PhD at Michigan State, certainly I was apprehensive initially. But it was important to do that because I think of the example it set for my sons. I think of the example it set for other young men, not just men of color, but all young men. Say, wait, I can do this. And that's what I tried to do.
As our time winds down together tonight, Ike McKinnon, what advice to give to our young listeners?
Listen. I think it's important for our young people to listen. And don't be afraid to take a step. Don't be afraid to listen to other people with what they have gone through and listen to them and ask, what can I do? How can I help? You know, old people, like myself, sometimes we have good ideas. I listen to older people. I remember older people saying to me, listen, son, you don't want to do this, you don't want to do that. This is a thing that you can do. And that made a difference in my life. So my advice for them is to listen and take an action.
As we talk about people in this Detroit area over the last 50 years that have made a huge difference, the Coleman Youngs and Eleanor Josiatis, the Father, all of these, we got to also add Ike McKinnon.
God, thank you, Jack.
Please keep up the great work.
I most certainly will. Thank you.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall. Believe in yourself.